Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, friend. Welcome back to Adrenaline on Realm. I'm your host, Neil Heligers, and this is The Signal, Episode 3. Please enjoy.
It's the top of the hour, Dayton. This is Evan Bell bidding you welcome to WKOR's UFOs Tonight, a radio talk show unsanctioned by the government, yet dedicated to exploring the most compelling mysteries of our night skies, come what may. Thank you to our sponsor, Albers Supermarkets, where you will find the freshest produce and all variety of meats butchered daily. Take heed, listeners, Thursday is double coupon day. Green stamps are distributed at the registers and layaway is gladly accepted on all non-perishable items. For tonight's topic, our panel of experts will be tackling what is believed by many to be aliens among us, communicating with others of their kind through mysterious shortwave radio transmissions like these. Every night, there are dozens of these bizarre recordings being broadcast across the globe. But we don't know exactly from where, or who is sending them, or what they mean, or who they're meant for. But we can guess, can't we? Dr. Richard Neely, an astrophysicist from the Palomar Institute of Astronomy and an expert in signal intelligence during the war, is playing the thankless role of skeptic on tonight's broadcast. Good evening, Doctor.
Thank you, Evan. Good to be here. Glad to be with you.
You've heard these recordings. We've all heard them.
7, 6, 4, 9, 9. 9, 9.
I'll put it to you straight, Doctor. What are they?
Well, I can tell you definitively that there's absolutely no information contained within the signals, at least in the ones I've studied.
No information?
Mm-hmm.
Yet they've been bombarding the radio waves 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for at least a decade, many since the late 40s. That seems like quite a commitment for the transmission of nothing.
I'm not saying they're meaningless, only that there is no hidden message within the signal itself. We need to distinguish between the various types of mysterious shortwave signals, may I?
Please.
Take this one, for example. Or this one. Or this.
If you're asking what they have in common, it's obviously the sequence of 5 code letters or numbers.
Only these are not codes per se, since theoretically, codes can be cracked, and these letter and number sequences cannot.
I hear you, but I'm not buying it. Not yet.
Each of these broadcasts consists of 2 parts. The interval signal, which is generally unique and is often 2 to 12 musical bars or tones or beeps or bells. The interval signal telegraphs that what's to follow is a coded message consisting of a sequence of letters, or most likely numbers, often in groupings of five.
I hate to step on your sermon, Doc, but you just said code.
Coded, actually. But before we proceed, I think it might help to differentiate between types of radio signals. You are broadcasting your radio show at a fixed point on the AM dial.
Bingo! That's how we keep our listeners coming back and how we manage to woo our advertisers.
Yet, your powerful 50,000-watt broadcast is considered local in that your high-frequency radio signal can only travel in a straight line. Because of this, your signal eventually becomes lost as the radio waves bump into obstacles on their way to the horizon.
We have listeners tuning in from over 100 miles outside of Dayton. That's not small potatoes, Doc. Just ask the folks at Albers Supermarkets.
No, it isn't. But shortwave radio frequencies can be heard many thousands of miles away. This is because shortwave frequencies can bounce off of charged particles in the upper atmosphere, which allows them to zigzag between the Earth and the sky all over the globe.
Like aliens in UFOs.
I'm sure that's more in the realm of your area of expertise, Evan, than mine. Though I do believe the term UFO, or unidentified flying object, refers to any unexplained aerial phenomena.
We use it here on my show to refer solely to suspected alien spacecraft piloted by extraterrestrial beings.
Very well. Basically, shortwave radio signals, the basis for all international radio, operate at a relatively low frequency. Because fewer waves pass through a single point at every second, it means that they can travel a lot further.
I'm so glad we cleared that up, Doc, but everything you've just said leaves me with more questions than answers.
Welcome to the physicist world!
If I hear you right, these shortwave signals can originate from pretty much anywhere on Earth.
Basically true.
Which is why their broadcast locations are impossible to trace.
Well, the general geographic area might be discernible, but not necessarily to the precise origination point. So, you are correct.
So, according to you, we don't know where they are coming from or whom they're meant for.
Well, no, not exactly. And they do have a name. They're called numbers stations. We're pretty certain whom these signals are meant for.
Want to share, Doctor?
Spies.
Spies?
Perhaps submarines as well, or surveillance ships at sea, but mostly for spies in the field. It's through these broadcasts that spies, among them undoubtedly the crafty Soviet Russians, receive instructions from their handlers or their governments. This is the era of Cold War espionage. The number stations are a symptom of our modern day and age.
But you said, and I quote, there is no hidden message in the signal itself.
And I stand by that claim. The sequence of numbers broadcasted will most likely correspond to a pre-established sequence of numbers in a spy's codebook. Each working spy probably has hundreds of them. Each separate grouping of numbers means something different. Perhaps one sequence of five numbers will correspond to something like, be at the cafe at noon in Hamburg on Monday, or pick up the package at the tobacconist's this weekend, or, God forbid, execute the senator at his ranch at first opportunity. This way, through the signal from the number station, a spy can pick up his instructions from anywhere, provided he has access to a shortwave radio. He doesn't need to risk capture by meeting with his counterpart in a park or by retrieving a message at a dead drop. He doesn't have to depend on a telephone or posted letters. He can be half a continent away from his handlers when he tunes in, and there is no way to trace who is listening to any given shortwave broadcast. Possibly hundreds, if not thousands of people are eavesdropping voyeurs tuned in to number stations' signals every day. The message itself is not a secret, but only the spy who is in possession of a code book will be able to ascertain what it means. Everyone else will be mystified.
So, basically, the spy has a decoder ring from a box of Cracker Jack listing the letter or number combinations for a prearranged number station.
Well, that's rather simplistic, but you are essentially correct.
Then wouldn't you say that this same rather ingeniously simplistic system will work just as efficiently for the aliens among us?
You mean your UFO aliens? Theoretically, yes, I suppose it could.
How much better can it be than to hide in plain sight amongst an already established Cold War secret communications network? The mothership, or even a home planet, can broadcast shortwave radio signals disguised as number station communiques, and the aliens who have inserted themselves into our population can tune in to get their instructions, just like the Cold War spies. Indiscernible from human spies, in fact.
Well, I suppose. But the voices delivering the numbers or letters, you've heard them. They're clearly human.
Easily achievable through a voice synthesizer.
That's more in your area of expertise than mine, Evan.
In fact, any number of these number stations could be operated by extraterrestrial beings.
That's not a known fact.
Neither is your theory about Soviet Russians being the senders and Cold War spies being the recipients of the messages.
Well, it's widely accepted as being a fact by our government intelligence services.
Are you talking about the same government agencies who have been denying the existence of UFOs for more than a decade? Who have been engaged in an active cover-up and public disinformation campaign about numerous sightings and crash sites and abductions all over the United States? Who have silenced eyewitnesses to landings or close encounters with either cash or threats or both? Who have
Would an extraterrestrial alien even have access to a shortwave radio?
Is that a joke?
An observation couched as a question.
Then the answer to your question would be, why wouldn't they?
The counterpoint answer would be, why would they? If they can fly here from another galaxy, possibly light years in the distance, they surely must have a pre-established method of intercommunication that is more along the lines of some yet-to-be-imagined bioneural networking system, rather than something so rudimentary as earthbound shortwave radio signals.
Where were you born, Dr. Neely?
What?
It's just that I'm wondering why you changed your name from Nevsky to Neely in 1947.
I did so legally.
Nevsky is Russian, isn't it?
I really don't know where you're going with this, Evan.
Your expertise is in signal communications. I would imagine our listeners find that suspicious. Very suspicious.
Suspicious? In what way? I surely don't know what you mean by...
Time again to pay some bills, folks. Our next segment is sponsored by Fred's Mufflers and Brakes out on the highway.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Yes?
Home from the hospital already, Colonel Sobeck. That's good. You must be feeling better. I brought flowers. May I come in?
My wife isn't here at the moment.
I know. I waited until she drove away. Beauty parlor appointment, isn't it? A standing appointment for a set and comb out every Wednesday, my sources tell me.
Who are you? Are you British?
American now. I have a code name, but I prefer to communicate face-to-face on a first-name basis. Call me Rosemary, and I'll call you Edward. Edward.
You're the woman down in the quadrangle, the one waving her arms.
I'm actually the woman on your front porch holding a get-well bouquet of flowers like a penitent in a Day of the Dead parade. They're surprisingly heavy.
My home address is not a matter of public record.
Do you really think I'm a member of the public, Edward?
You better come in. Please sit down.
Thank you. I will.
I didn't mean beside me. I meant over there.
So much cozier this way. The missing files have been returned to your office. Surreptitiously, of course. You needn't worry about any subsequent fallout from their disappearance.
You're connected to Swan.
I've come for a visit in person because I know you wished to discuss something with him but never got the chance.
Oh, I didn't plan to have a discussion.
Interrogation, then? Swan would have told you nothing. You could have asked him pointed questions until you were blue in the face. That cagey customer can evade and stonewall with the best of them. Far past when the cows come home or even succumb to old age.
So I suppose this is you picking up where he left off. That's why you're here?
1952.
Oh, I hope you're not going to tell me that we had a one-night stand at a NATO summit that year.
I would have certainly remembered if we had, Edward.
Please don't put your hand on my thigh like that.
I too recently had a health scare. Barely skirting death does make one more appreciative of the pleasures of mortal life, wouldn't you say so?
My wife has taken away my cigarettes, put me on a diet. Whatever pleasures I enjoyed are gone. Well, except for golf.
Golf has its perks, Edward. Fresh air and honest exercise at the very least. 1952 was the year. In April, to be precise, when Life, then and still one of the most popular magazines in the United States, as you probably well know, published a story entitled Have We Visitors from Space? Catchy title, don't you think?
I may have seen it. We have a subscription to Life magazine.
And to Playboy, too, I would imagine.
Hey, I enjoy the articles. They are excellent.
I'm sure you do, big boy. Life magazine promised scientific evidence that there is a real case for interplanetary saucers.
If you say so.
The result? By July of that year, there were countless newspaper headlines reporting flying saucers swarming Washington, D.C.
I may have heard something about that.
I'm sure you did. The number of monthly UFO sightings officially reported to the U.S. Air Force went soaring up from 23 to 148, more than a six-fold increase. That's a thorny problem, isn't it? In the middle of a surging Cold War, when public anxiety about the Soviet communists ranges from fears of widespread psychological warfare to terror of complete nuclear obliteration, rampant reports of UFO sightings become increasingly problematical.
Well, or a welcome distraction for the masses, like the popularity of horror movies during the Great Depression, Frankenstein and Dracula and pictures like that.
An excellent point, Edward. though paranoia tends to grow and consume everything in its path rather than differentiate between sources of pervasive unease.
True.
Oh, I do understand. Believe me, I do. The field tests in 1952 flowed naturally from the Project Mogul experiments.
Excuse me? Project... What did you call it?
A smart man has a hard time playing ignorant, doesn't he? Project Mogul. Roswell, New Mexico, 1947. Top secret atomic espionage project. Ring a bell? Ding, ding. The origin of the current UFO conspiracy mania. That 200 yards of recovered wreckage that poor rancher stumbled across had tongues wagging from coast to coast. Flying disc crashes, the papers screamed.
That was a weather balloon.
Please, handsome. It wasn't and you know it. But it was no alien spacecraft either. No self-respecting extraterrestrial is going to assemble a flying saucer from rubber strips, tinfoil, wooden sticks, and scotch tape.
How would you know?
Trust me, I know. Then, instead of lying low, what do you bright boys go and do less than 5 years later? Start yet another battery of field tests, again in New Mexico, which, if you ask me, was ill-advised, if not just plain dumb. But it was quite a sight for those who witnessed it out there on the mesa. Dummy drops, alien bodies raining down from the sky. But they weren't so much alien as manufactured, were they? Dummies with latex skin and aluminum bones hurriedly retrieved by military vehicles.
If there were such a project, that would also be top secret.
Undoubtedly.
There probably is nothing sinister behind it. Just testing new ways for pilots to survive falls, theoretically.
But to those who were inflamed by the mystery at Roswell a few years earlier, this was adding fuel to the already flaming fires of paranoia.
Quite a clever turn of phrase there, Rosemarie.
Thank you, Edward. Because of the conspiracy theories surging out of control at the time, the CIA was forced to initiate a secret national policy concerning what should be told to the public in order to minimize the risk of panic and to avoid growing national hysteria.
Then I suppose that makes you and Mr. Swan CIA.
No, that's about as likely as you being assigned to Project Blue Book in 1952 and having the whole top-secret endeavor headquartered right here in Dayton, Ohio, at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which happens to be less than a mile from this very house.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
A secret government-sanctioned inquiry into UFOs? Ring a bell? Ding, ding.
Afraid not.
Neither of us, Edward, is authorized to confirm or deny much of anything, are we? Brings us to a stalemate.
Yeah, well, then why are you here, Rosemarie?
Give you flowers and get well wishes. I did not think, after what transpired in your office, that you would welcome a second visit from Mr. Swan.
Damn straight, that bastard nearly killed me.
No, that's not true. It was decades of not resisting that second helping of dessert that nearly took you down, Edward. I don't mean to cast blame or aspersions, but I believe it's your wife who's at least partially to blame for your cardiac infarction.
Estella's a great cook.
Are culinary skills the best attribute of a wife?
We've been married for nearly 30 years.
And would you say you've been satisfied the whole time?
How do you manage to stay so slim, Rosemarie?
Daily calisthenics, a weekly golf game, and herbal tea. Your fingers are warm, Edward. May I put my hand here?
My wife could be home in any minute.
She's not due for another half hour, so my driver will honk twice when her car turns the corner.
That's not my thigh, Rosemarie.
I know. Every document I've ever seen consists of the text and the white space. It's only the text that's ever redacted. Have you noticed that? And yet, it's the white space. It's always seemed to me that's the most provocative. What it doesn't say.
What doesn't it say?
Perhaps those silences are worth exploring at a greater depth for our mutual benefit.
You tried to turn me.
Is it working? Stern is not how I would describe this. Turn you on is more apt in the current vernacular. We're on the same side, Edward. I'm merely seeking to join forces, to share information, among other things.
What things?
Golf, perhaps, or an afternoon of shared appreciation of the white spaces.
Oh, I would have thought that...
What? The agency would send some 25-year-old simpering honeypot to your door. What fun would there be in that for a man of your years and sophistication?
None whatsoever.
I knew that. In our respective worlds, Edward, it's experience that counts. It's mileage that reveals character. It's...
Damn it!
Don't fret, Edward, darling. This is just the beginning.
Sir? Sir? Mr. Swan? Oh, there you are, sir. What are you looking at up in the sky? I didn't know you had a shortwave. Great fun, aren't they? Just last night I heard an entire radio show about those numbers stations. On this local station it was. Very informative.
It's not a numbers station. Did you hear any numbers being spoken aloud?
No, but... it sounds a lot like it, though. Weird. Really strange.
A vixen sounds like a banshee, but they're nothing alike.
You stargazing, sir? Looking for shooting stars? Communicating with your home planet? sorry, a bad joke.
The North Star. See? It's visible just there.
Yes, sir, I see it. But I might not have known that's what it was. I get it confused sometimes with Venus. They call Venus the morning star, don't they? Only Venus isn't a star, it's a planet. And it appears mostly in the early evening. Never could figure that one out. Morning star. What the hey? True north. Isn't that what they call it? Fishermen use the North Star to find their way out in the ocean.
It's our true north now, but it hasn't always been. Polaris marks the general region of Earth's celestial pole at this moment purely by chance. 5,000 years ago, it did not. Nor will it 13,000 years from now. Your fishermen of the future will forever be lost at sea.
But right now, that's all we've got, sir. That's what my dad always told me. True north is true north. And you lose your compass or something?
See that constellation there, lying on the plane of the Milky Way like a dazzling cross? That's the astrocism known as the Northern Cross, a part of the constellation Cygnus.
Cygnus?
Those upper two stars marking the tip of the Northern Cross? They approximate the position of the North Celestial Pole for Mars.
Well, imagine that. Those pesky Martians from the Red Planet have their very own true north.
Don't we all? Cygnus is a Latinized Greek word for swan.
There's a fun fact coincidence for you, sir.
My daughter and I made a pact years ago. Each night we both gaze up at the Northern Cross for a few moments when it first becomes visible in the night sky, wherever we are. And for that too brief period of time, we believe we can... reach out across time and space to stand beside each other.
Aw, that's really nice. I didn't know you had a daughter, sir. Hell, I didn't even know you were married. What's your daughter's name, if you don't mind my asking?
Her name is Anastasia. What do you want, Phillips?
I got the, items that you wanted, sir. Two vials, and a syringe, rubber tubing, alcohol wipes. Deadly concoction if you don't know how to administer it. If you don't mind my asking...
I do mind. Now please, leave me in peace for a few minutes.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. When I was bound apprentice in famous Lincolnshire, I served my master truly for nearly 7 odd year, till I took up to poaching as usual quickly here. Oh, 'tis my delight on a shining night in the season of the year.
Mayu, Mayuski Bayu, ni la zresia na kraju. Pridiot siriki bauchok. Iu fuatet zabachok. Iu taishit falasok. Patra hitomi kusto.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.
The Signal is created by Cassandra Wells and Charlie Randazzo. Written by Cassandra Wells. Produced by Fred Greenhalgh and Marco Palmieri. Directed by Charlie Randazzo. Executive produced by Cassandra Wells, Daniel Kamen, Molly Barton, and Julian Yap. Performed by Daniel Kamen, Perry King, Marta Cross, Adam J. Smith, Tracy Winters, Time Winters, Harry Gawillam, Tom Beyer, Jeff Blumberg, Mark Irvingson, Jackson Gawillam, and Jennifer Taub. Sound design and editing by Charlie Randazzo. Music by Quiet on the Set. Additional cover art by Heather Mason. Production manager, Devin Shepard. Production coordinator, Angela Yee. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadolahi. You're listening to Adrenaline, The Signal, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Helligers. Audio editing by Angela Yee. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like Adrenaline by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.